Morning. Today's daf in Krisus is Yud Gimel. We're on Yud Beis Amud Beis. We are towards the top of the Amud. We're starting with the words of Rav Nachman today. Opened up the third parak of the Masechta yesterday, speaking about Chiv Chatas. And we are at the beginning of the Karban Chatas, meaning the obligation. When is one obligated to bring Karban Chatas? So the information is pretty easy. That is when you violate an Isser in the Torah that brings about a liability of a Karban Chatas. So we already established in the first parak of the Masechta, the 36 times, really 34 Isurim in the Torah in which one is Chayav a Karban Chatas. Again, just to reiterate quickly, the number 34 is not an absolute number. Comes out to a lot more than 34, but the Mishnah kind of puts it in 34 different categories. It comes out to a larger number, see the Rambam, in the beginning of the Halachas of Karban Chatas, where he actually enumerates all the various Isurim. But still, I'll use the numbers of the Mishnah. 34 times in the Torah, where one is going to violate an Isser in the Torah, and one is going to be chayav karban chatas if done b'shogeg, if done inadvertently. And so, good. So if a person is violating any one of these 34, by the way, it's not good, but if someone violates any one of these 34, he's going to be subject to a karban chatas if done so b'shogeg. The question that our Mishnah opens up with in the beginning of the third parak is, what if you didn't realize it and you were informed that you violated the Isser? You ate something, you thought it was Shuman, you thought it was permissible fat, and it turns out to be that it wasn't. It was Chalef. So what becomes under those circumstances? So we learned in the Mishnah, well, it depends how many people told you, and it really depends on your reaction. So, like, for example, the first case in the Mishnah that we saw yesterday, in the opening of the third parak, Amrulo, Achalta Chalef, maybe Chatas. So let's say they say to him, presumably we're talking about two witnesses. So they say to him, you ate chalev, so he has to bring a karban chatas. Now, it gets a little bit more complicated because it really does depend on the person's reaction. And as we learned at the end of the Mishnah, and now we're going to be spending some time discussing right now, let's say two witnesses come to you and say you ate chalev, and your response is, you don't know what you're talking about. And you're just simply in denial. So do you have to bring a karban chatas? So that was a machlokis in the Mishnah between Rav Meir and the Chacham. Rav Meir says, Adim, well, you have two witnesses. Two witnesses can bring about a capital punishment. So Rav Meir's argument in the Mishnah, so it seems to be a very good argument. If two witnesses can bring about a capital punishment, so then two witnesses for sure should put you on the hook, on a liability of bringing a karban chatas. That was Rav Meir back in the Mishnah. And the Chachamim say no. The Chachamim say that if you refute their testimony, so you don't have to bring a karban chatas. Now, as far as the argument of the Chachamim are concerned, so that was a discussion. That was the discussion in the Gemara, and that discussion began yesterday's daf. Yesterday's daf, Yud Beis Amud Aleph, at the beginning of the Amud, at the top of the Amud, Yud Beis Amud Aleph, so Ibailahu. So the Gemara asked the following question, what's the basis behind the sheet of the Chachamim, where you say, you refute their testimony, and you're believed over them, on what basis? So two possibilities of the Gemara are, number one, you have Nemonis, your Nemonis is greater than their Nemonis. Now, let's put this into perspective, as we discussed yesterday. Your nemonis is greater than their nemonis, not when it's a capital punishment. Meaning if they say you killed, right, and you say, no, I didn't, right, and you're there on the stand, and they ask you, did you kill? And you say, no, I didn't. Well, if two witnesses say you did, then you did. And so your credibility is not going to exceed their testimony. And so what you have to say for the Gemara right now is that, yes, that's true. That's tenet. That's fundamental. But that is regarding Basin's obligation of what to do with you. But when it comes to your own obligations that are generated by out of your pocket, like, for example, Karban Chatas, so then their testimony, your testimony is going to trump theirs. Right? Neman al-Atzmo yoser mimei ha'ish. That was the expression that we saw yesterday's Gemara, that your nemanus is greater than 100 people. And so therefore, vis-a-vis Karban Chatas, where it's your out-of-pocket requirement, so I'll tell you what. You say whatever you guys want to say. Here's what I believe, and my credibility exceeds that of yours. Okay. And I could also add, by the way, just one other point, and that is that we're talking about not a punishment per se. We're talking about a karban chatas, meaning it's your ability to bring a kapara. And I quipped this yesterday, but if you think about it, really, it rings truth in that if you really don't believe you're chayav a karban chatas, so despite the fact that two people say you are, even when you bring it, you're not going to think to yourself, okay, good, I needed the kapara. I'm going to bring the kapara. If you legitimately believe it, you don't need it, so then your nemanis is going to exceed theirs. That's one way to understand the Chachamim, and really then becomes a fundamental issue. where you have more Neimanus than they do. But the Gemara also proposes another way to understand the Chachamim, and that is based on the argument of Migu. Migu is a Neimanus booster, if you will. Okay, means to say that normally you have a certain amount of Neimanus, but if you have a Migu, so what it does is it boosts your Neimanus. What is Migu? It's the idea of what I could have said. Since I could have said this, and I elected to choose something which is less credible, well, that less credibility is going to be bolstered by the fact that I could have said that. And so therefore, what it does is it basically gives a boost to your Neimanus. Over here, you said, I didn't eat the chalev. It could be understood to mean, I didn't eat the chalev b'shogeg, I ate it b'mezid. Now, we pointed out yesterday that this migu is very difficult to understand. Because what you could have said is not something that you really want to say. You don't want to tell people that I ate chalev b'mezid. It's not something that that puts you in a good position, a good light. Okay, so I admitted yesterday, and I'm going to admit again today, and I'll probably do so in the future as well, that this migu over here is a little bit difficult to hear, but nevertheless, it could operate on the premise of a migu. And if that's true, so the Gemara says that could be the basis of the Chachamim. Yesterday in the Gemara, we went through nafkaminas. What difference would it make, practically speaking, whether it's based on a fundamental rule, your Neimanus is going to exceed their Neimanus, or is it going to be based on a migu? What would be nafkaminas? So go back to yesterday's Gemara, review yesterday's Gemara, where the Gemara talks about Neimanus. Amar Rav Nachman, picking up where we left off yesterday, Halachik Rav Yehuda, so this is the Gemara now, continuing on Yud Beis Amud Beis. It's about 10 lines from the top of the Amud, and the Gemara now is going to pass on the Halacha falls like Rav Yehuda. Question, who is Rav Yehuda in this discussion? So Rav Yehuda is the Chachamim. Right, the Rav Yehuda we saw in the Braisa yesterday. If you go back to the bottom of yesterday's Amud, so you'll remember that Rav Yehuda was brought down in the Braisa, espousing the viewpoint of the Chachamim, which is that your Neimanus exceeds the Neimanus of the witnesses in the case of a Karban Chatos. Meaning we follow like the Chachamim. So Allah Rav Yehuda, Amr Rav Yosef Lo Amru Ela Beino Levein Atzmo. Lo Amru Ela Beino Levein Atzmo Ula Atzmo. So Rav Nachman puts a qualifier on. We are going to paskin like Rav Yehuda, i.e. we're going to paskin like the Chachamim. We're going to say that if two witnesses come and say you ate chalev, and your refutation is, no, I didn't, so you are Neman, period. But, however, even though we say period, so Rav Nachman puts in a little caveat on that period, right? A small fine print, if you will. And that is that this is only true, your Nemanus is only going to be true vis-a-vis yourself, but not vis-a-vis others. Now, what does that mean exactly? So Rashi over here writes as follows. La'atzmo ne'eman l'chol taharos. Shuhu nogea. The adam ne'eman al atzmo. Aval li'acherim lo yachilum. Two witnesses come and you say, and said that you came into contact with Tumah. And you say, no, I didn't. And again, your ne'eman succeeds their testimony. Fine. However, that's only relevant to you. Your ne'eman is only going to exceed theirs vis-a-vis as it affects and applies to you. However, regarding other people, it's not your Neimanus is not going to exceed theirs. Meaning, think about it from another person, from a bystander, from a third party. Meaning, the third party now wants to eat this food and wants to eat in a state of Tahara. Now, here's the problem. Two witnesses say that it came into contact with Tumah. Now, the owner of the food himself says, no, it didn't. Or in other words, they don't know what they're talking about. So again, the owner has right to make that statement, but only vis-a-vis himself. Now, from a third party, from a bystander, so he's looking at it now, and think of the conflict that he's faced with. Two witnesses say that it's tummy. One person says it's not tummy. Well, who do I believe? Well, generally speaking, you believe the two witnesses over somebody else. If it's two against two, okay, so then we have a push. But if it's two against one, so then you have to believe the two over the one. And that's exactly what Rav Nachman's saying, that for the bystander, you're going to have to take the word of the Edim as opposed to the owner of the food. Now, the owner of the food, he's allowed to eat it. So it's a strange conclusion. He's allowed to eat it because it's his food and it's his Neimanus, and his Neimanus exceeds that of the two witnesses. But for a bystander, so it's he's going to have to go with the two witnesses. Now, Amar Reish Lakish, three quick statements of the Gemara regarding the following. We now know in the Mishnah that Machlok Chun Ramey and the Chachamim, we know that the Halacha falls like the Chachamim, but still, we're going to still sit on Ramey's position for just a little bit more time in the Gemara, and that is, Rav Meir says that we're going to believe the two over the one. Rav Meir doesn't subscribe to the Migu, or he doesn't subscribe to the Neimanus, like we described already. However, the Amoraim are going to note, there are going to be cases where even Rav Meir is going to capitulate. And there are three cases in the Gemara that it brings up right now, that even Rav Meir is going to say that the person has Neimanus, and it's going to be greater than the Neimanus of Edom. What are the three cases? Amri Shlakish, case number one. Murder Amela Chachamim Shim Amri Loshnaim Baalta Shivcha Charufa. So let's say the accusation goes like this. The two witnesses come and say to a man, you had relations with a Shivcha Charufa. Shivcha Charufa, we happen to have just discussed in great detail just a couple days ago in the daf. So it is a Shivcha Kananis, I'll say it simple. It's a Shivcha Kananis who is dedicated to an Eved Ivri. So it's a form of a union, it's like marriage. And this, and now a man, a Jewish man, had relations with this woman. Under such circumstances, the accusation is you are now liable. What does liability mean in this case? Like we learned just a couple days ago. So for the man, he has to bring a Karman Asham. And for the woman, she's going to get Malkus. So the accusation now is flying. The witnesses said, you had relations with the Shivcha Charufa. V'u'amar lo ba'alti. And he says, no, I didn't. Okay, now, this is obviously as it relates to a Karban Asham. So here, the Chachamim, we know what they're going to say. The person's Ne'amanus succeeds that of the two witnesses. What about Rav Meir? So Rav Sheshis is making the argument. Sorry, I said it wrong. Reish Lakish is saying the argument that Rav Meir is going to agree in this case to the Chachamim. Why? Because di bayamar lohun lo gamar tibiasi. Because as we learned just a couple days ago, when it comes to the Avera Shivcha Charufa, the liability only comes about when it's Gemar Bia, when it's full penetration. But if it's partial penetration, so there's no liability. So he could say to the witnesses, look, obviously I did an appropriate action, but you didn't see the act in total. You don't know what kind of penetration we're talking about. So there was partial penetration, not full penetration. So here, he can really correct what they are saying. So here, the Rav Meir is going to agree to the Chachamim that we're going to believe him over the witnesses. I'm Rav Sheshis. Here comes the second halacha. Moder Rav Meir l'Chachamim bin Nazir Tameh. Sharmer lo shnayim nitmeis v'hu amar lo nitmeisi. Pater. The witnesses come and say to a Nazir, you become Tameh. And the Nazir himself says, no. Now again, we already know what the Chachamim are going to say. His credibility is going to exceed their testimony. But what about Rav Meir? So here, Rav Sheshis is saying that Rav Meir would agree in such a scenario. Why? Because over here, he has a migu. Now, again, didn't Rav Meir in the Mishnah reject the idea of migu in these scenarios? So obviously what you have to say in these gemaras over here is that these scenarios that we're illustrating right now are stronger migus. Like in the previous case of Shivcha Charufa, it was the migu of the accused is stronger because he literally knows what kind of bia was it. Was Ha'ara, was it Gemar Bia? Here too, his Nazirus. Look, you don't know about my Nazirus. And as far as you're concerned, I don't even have to be a Nazir right now. Meaning, it could have been that I went to a Chacham and I asked my Chacham to release me from my Nazirus, which is a possibility. So you're going to coming at me and telling me that I'm a Nazir and I become Tameh? Look, I have much more control on this issue than you do. I know better than you, or let's say better. I'm more credible on this issue than you are. Rav Meir would agree in such a scenario. Third halacha. Amar Rabbi, mod Rav Meir l'chacham mishim amar lo shnayim yodea ata be'edus ploni v'hu amar lo yadati. Witnesses come along and they say, look, you are a witness, meaning we were there at the time and we know that you can testify about a certain issue. So you're a witness. And his counter argument is, I don't know any information. Now this is suppression of testimony, as we learned also in this Masechta. Suppression of testimony is an Avera. It brings about, if done either B'shogeg or B'mezid, one of those rare circumstances where you're going to bring a Karban B'mezid, so it brings about a liability for a Karban. A Karban Olaviyarate, if in fact you are caught suppressing testimony that you have. And so, witnesses said, you know testimony. Now, I'll just quip. If the witnesses know that he has testimony, doesn't the witnesses themselves, aren't they also able to testify? Okay, but we can be creative. We can come up with a scenario where they, for whatever reasons, can't testify. Maybe their relatives, whatever. And he's saying, no, I don't know anything. And then it turns out that, and he swore that he didn't know anything. And so it comes out now that he's chayv a karban. Here, Rav Meir will agree. He's not chayv a karban. Pater. Because to be a witness does not just simply mean you saw something. Seeing something by itself doesn't make you a witness. But rather, you need yichud eidim. You need to be identified as a witness. You ever gone to a chasna before, you hear the Masad de Kedushin say to the witnesses, "So I'm miyached you. I'm going to designate you as the witnesses for this event." Now, sometimes you don't hear it, but the reason why some Masad de Kedushin don't do that is because A, they may be doing it off mic, so you don't hear it, and B, the context obviously is such where we know they're the witnesses. They're being called up to be the witnesses. So sometimes you don't hear it because it's just obvious that they're the witnesses. But in any event, to be a witness means that you have to be designated and dedicated to be a witness. So the counter argument over here could just simply be, look, I may have been there, I may have seen it, but that doesn't mean I was a witness. So again, his argument is such a strong argument that it's going to override the testimony that's given by the witnesses. So when all said and done, a wrap up on the entire sugya, we have a machlokus between the Chacham and Rameir, whether a person's credibility is going to exceed that of two witnesses in the case of a chiv karban, anything that relates to him personally, his personal obligation. According to the Chachamim, the person himself has more namonis than that of the witnesses accusing him, for two possible reasons. Either it's fundamental, namon adam yoser memei ish, or because of the migu, of the possible migu argument. One of those two, but anyway, that's the opinion of the Chacham. Rameir says a person is not going to be believed over that of two witnesses. He's going to have to bring a karban chatos. And what we just did in the Gemara is, number one, we pass like the Chachamim, not like Rameir. Number two, even though we won't pass like Rameir, but there are three occasions, there are three circumstances where even Rameir will yield the floor to that of the Chacham. Continuing in the Gemara. Lo niskav, ava achal chelev v'chelev elam echad. You ate chelev, and then you ate chelev, and you did so in one state of unawareness. Maskel of Rav Zera. Amayna eno chayv ela chatos echad. Simple question with a very fundamental answer. You ate two kizesim of chalev. Shouldn't that bring about two carbon chatases? So amalei abaye halamta mechulakos v'acha elamecharu diika. So a fundamental answer, and that is, when you repeat an avera, but you do so b'shogeg, in one state of halama, in one state of unawareness, so you're not going to be chayv multiple carbonos. That all is just going to simply compound itself, but it's going to be one element, if you will. It's only going to bring about one carbon. Now, that is a fundamental rule when it comes to a carbon chatas, that if you repeat an avera but behalam echad, you're still only going to be chayv one carbon. Now, ikadamakshile hachi. Some have a different format in terms of how this information is presented. Taima dehalam echas. The reason why is because it's one halam habishay halam chayv shtayim. If it's done in two states of unawareness, and that means, right, the human mind, right, it's not as concrete as we like to think it is, right? What happens is that you forget chelev is asr. You eat a kezais of chelev. Then you remembered, I shouldn't have done that. That was chelev, right? It's asr. And then you lapse again into a state of unawareness. Okay, I know it sounds strange, but it's possible. So that now, that awareness that you had separating the two achilas, that is going to separate the two acts, and you're going to be chayv two karbanos. Again, fundamental rules as it relates to the number of karbanos that you have to bring. Chayv shtayim. Amai, shem chelev achad hu, amalei, abai, yahalamas mechulakim. And so Abai gives us the very basic and fundamental rule of, yeah, that's true. It is the same iser, but it's done in different halamos. And since they're done in different halamos, you're going to be chayv multiple karbanos for each state of unawareness you're in. So the Gemara points out that if you ate separate isurim, you're going to be chayv on each of the isurim. If you ate one isur, you're only going to be chayv one. So Amar Eish Lakish Mishum Bar Tutini Kigon She'achlu Kishnei Tamchuyim. Sorry, Kishachlu Bishnei Tamchuyim. V'aliva de Rabbi Yoshua. So the Gemara says, well, let's consider the following. Let's say you ate the same isur, but prepared in different ways. What the Gemara describes as tamchuyim. The word tamchuy literally means a plate. In this context, it means that you ate the same iser, it's chalev and chalev. One was roasted and the other was cooked. And so, and they were put in different plates, but the plate's not critical. The critical part is they were prepared in different manners. The amr tamchuyim mechulakim. Now, Rav Yeshua has a general rule, which is that if they were prepared in different ways, so they are viewed as different isurim, even though it's the same iser. And so therefore, michulakim. So they're going to be divided. Now, I might have thought that this position of Rabbi Yeshua can both help us and it can hurt us as well. It can register as a kula and as a chumra. Now, kula, let's start with the easy one. Chumra, how would it register as a chumra? Very simple. In other words, if I eat chalev followed by chalev, and I did so by halam echad, but one was roasted and the other was cooked. So how many carbon chatos do you have to bring? Now you have to bring two. Meaning, if I don't subscribe to Rav Yeshua, what did I do? I repeated the same Avera within Halam Echad. I'm only chayav one. But if you subscribe to Rav Yeshua, that's now two carbon chatasis. That's the chumrah. What would be the kula according to Rabbi Yeshua? Well, let's say I ate a half a kezais of chalev, followed by another half a kezais of chalev. But it happens to be that one was roasted and the other was cooked. Oh, so maybe Rabbi Yeshua would say, well, look, if they're going to bring about two karbonos, if I ate them as shtei kezaisim, so maybe then, if I ate a half kezais one, half kezais the other, they are viewed as two totally different entities, and they're not going to be mitzarif to bring about one carbon chatas. That would be the kula. So the Gemara says, kamash malan dechayav. So that's what the Mishnah is coming to teach me. That this din of Rav Yeshua, that tamchui mechulakim, only brings about a chumrah, but not a kula. Am lechumrah amar, lekula lo amar. Okay, that is a chiddush within the shita of Rav Yeshua. Iga da amre al seifa mishnei minim pater. The Gemara now is going to suggest that we're going to have the same discussion, but going on the next section of the Mishnah, and actually comes out now that the conclusion is going to be different. The Mishnah says shnei minim pater, that two different minim are going to be exempt shita. Now that's obvious because once the Mishnah has told us that one min is going to be chayiv, shnei minim are going to be pater. Amre shlakish mishum bar tutini kigon shachlu b'shnei tamchuyin v'aliba de Rabbi Yeshua damar tamchuyin mechulakim. When the Mishnah says shnei minim, do you know what the Mishnah meant? It meant not two different isurim. It meant the same isur, but it meant the same isur that was prepared in two different manners. And what the Mishnah is telling us is that if I ate a half a kezias of one and a half a kezias of the other, so I'm going to be pater. Now, again, according to Rabbi Yoshua, so I might have thought that Rabbi Yeshua only made his point regarding a chomer but not lekula. Why is it described as beis minim? Because you ate it prepared in two different manners. V'ketani pater. Now the Mishnah is telling us that you're pater. Comes out now in this version of the discussion. Ama loshna lekula v'loshna lechumra. Doesn't matter whether it's leniency or stringency. Kam Rav Yeshua midaseifa min. Kamar Rabbi Yeshua. Midaseifa minecha v'shnei tamchoyin. Reisha minecha v'tamchoy echad. So the Gemara says, because look, we're going to assume symmetry in the Mishnah. Since the first case of the Mishnah was talking about the one type that was prepared in two different manners, so the Seifa is as well. So pshita, am ravina kagon sha'isa lo yediyah bein tayim. So the Gemara says, well, let's entertain the following point. Let's say that between your first half kezias and your second half kezias, you had a yediyah bein tayim. You became aware in the middle. V'alibet Rav Gamliel da'amar en yediyah l'chatzi shir. Now Rav Gamliel makes the following statement. If I have a state of awareness, as we already stated just a couple minutes earlier, so the yediyah is going to be mechalik. Rav Gamliel has a really interesting position, which is, yes, he agrees fundamentally with the idea that a yediyah is going to be mechalik. But according to Rav Gamliel, but that's only true if the yediyah separates a shear from a shear. If let's say you only had a half a shear, according to Rami Gamliel, that's not going to separate one consumption and another consumption. Yediyah only becomes significant only if it concludes a full shear. In fact, we learned this in the Mishnah on Shabbos. Hakosif shnei osios v'shtei alamos achashachas v'achas arvis. Shabbos morning, you wake up, you write a letter. Okay, so you're halfway to violating the Shabbos. On Shabbos, to write, you have to write two letters. So you write a letter in the morning. And you did so b'shogeg, right? You forgot today was Shabbos. You wrote your first letter. And then, with pen in hand, you say to yourself, oh wait, today's Shabbos. So you stop yourself short now from having violated the Shabbos. Okay, after a nap, you wake up, a little groggy, you write your second letter. And you do so b'shogeg. Again, having forgotten that today was Shabbos. So, did you violate Shabbos now? Well, you did write two letters on one Shabbos, and you did so b'shogeg, but you had a yediyah bein tayim. You were aware in the middle. So this is a machlokas. Rami Gamliel mechayev v'chachamim pochim. Rami Gamliel savra en yediyah l'chatzi shir, v'rabbanan savra yesh yediyah l'chatzi shir. And this is exactly the machlokas between Rami Gamliel and the chachamim. Rami Gamliel takes the position that, yes, yediyah is mechalik, but a yediyah is only significant only if it follows a full shir. But a yediyah halfway through is not considered yediyah. Now, why that should be? So I don't have a good svara in terms of it. I could think of a couple of things, but I don't have anything like firmly in hand in terms of why that should be, but that's the sheet of Rabbi Gamliel. So it could very well be that our Mishnah also subscribes to that viewpoint, and that's why the Mishnah says that when you are having a yediyah between the Chatzi Shir and the Chatzi Shir, that yediyah is not going to break up the two, and so therefore it is you'd be chayiv at the end of doing the full shir, much like he says that regarding Shabbos and the writing of two letters. Adkan. That takes us now to basically the end of yesterday's daf, as it also now concludes the first discussion of our Mishnah, bringing about a carbon chata. So the question is, how did you know you violated the Yisr? So either you know because you yourself became aware, maybe others informed you. What if two witnesses informed you? What if you refute the two witnesses? So that was our first discussion in the parak. Plus, basic information regarding how many carbonas do you bring if I repeat the same Yisr behalam echad? If I do multiple isurim, if let's say I have foods prepared in different manners, so another basic discussion regarding how many carbon chatas do you have to bring. Next discussion, our Mishnah kama yishev ba'ochlin. Now, when it comes to eating food, let's say for example, you eat a kezayis. So, in order to be liable, you have to eat a kezayis and you have to do so also within a certain period of time. Now, probably you're familiar because you've heard in the past that period of time. Today's daf is really the daf that discusses the amount of time that you have to eat it within in order to create a liability. Like if you, let's say, for example, you eat the food in such small increments and at a really slow rate, so even though what you're doing is, let's say it clearly, wrong, nevertheless, it doesn't bring about a liability of a carbon until you eat it within a certain time frame. What is that time frame? The Mishnah actually records a debate on this very issue. Kama yishe ba'ochlin, how much time delay is there in the consumption? So ki'ilo ochel klayas divrei Rav Meir. So Rav Meir has a shita, which if you're not learning krisus, you never heard it. Because it said here, and I'm not sure if it's ever repeated again in Shas. I don't know if that point is correct, but it's really a localized position here in krisus. The amount of time that it takes to eat roasted grain. What did he mean by that? It's a vague statement trying to give a legal definition of time period. So stay tuned because the Gemara is going to ask that very question. Like, what did he mean by that? And the Chachamim give the position that we are used to hearing, and that is that the beginning of the consumption and the end of the consumption has to be time-bound, has to be contained within a time of Kedei Achilas Pras, the amount of time that it takes to eat a pras. Question number one, what is a pras? So a pras is an amount, literally means broken loaf of bread. A loaf of bread is assumed to be the volume of eight eggs, although that also is subject for debate, but I'm going to say it like Rashi saying it over here, that the volume of a loaf of bread is, a standard loaf of bread is eight eggs, and so therefore half of that would be four eggs. So the amount of time that it takes for you to consume a volume of food equivalent to four eggs. Now, we like, when we talk about time, so we like talking about it in units of minutes and hours, meaning it's generally speaking how we give a measurement of time. In the time of the Gemara, however, so they weren't slapping anything on the wrist. They gave them the minutes and the hours. So their measurements of time came in the context of how long does it take to do something. So over here, an action. So, or the amount of time it takes to walk from point A to point B. That is how they give measurements of time. So obviously for us, we would have been happier if the Mishnah would have said 5 minutes or 10 minutes. But obviously the Mishnah is not going to do that. So it now becomes a conversion issue. How do you convert the Kedei Achilas Pras into minutes? And so as you can imagine, there is no consensus in terms of how long is Kedei Achilas Pras in terms of converting it to minutes. On top of that, there's a range of somewhere between 2 to 9 minutes is generally what you're going to hear amongst the poskim. On top of that, there's a more fundamental issue, and that is not all eating is the same. In other words, various foods are eaten at different rates. So when the Mishnah over here says Kedei Achilas Pras, so does that mean that it's a objective measurement of time, or is the time going to be relative to the food that you're eating? That's a fundamental issue, which again, the Gemara is not going to discuss, but it is a worthwhile consideration. The Minchas Chinuch actually discusses this very topic.
Correct.
Again, in the Gemara, it's not going to discuss it. The Gemara is just going to leave it as a blanket statement of Kedei Achilas Pras. Okay, chayev ochlin tameim. I'm sorry, chayev period after the word chayev. Sorry. Next, achol ochlin tameim v'shasa mashkin tameim. If I ate food that's tamei, if I drink that is tamei. Now, in order to understand this line of the Mishnah, so I'm not going to go through the details. I'll just say it very, very flatly and very clearly. And in terms of the whys, on another occasion, if you eat food which is tamei, or if you drink liquid which is tamei, you become tamei. Now, from a fundamental standpoint, from a daraisa standpoint, this is not what happens. A person only becomes tamei when it comes into contact with an avatama, period. However, the Chachamim made a gzera that for the person who consumes tummy food or drinks tummy drink, so that person is going to be tummy. Why? On another occasion, we'll discuss it. Not this morning. Let's just right now, those are the facts. How much food do you have to drink? So a chatzi pras. So the food is going to be half of the previous measurement. So in other words, when we talked about the measurement of time, we said the consumption of the amount of time that it takes to eat a pras, which is 4 eggs. To become tummy, you have to eat tummy food equivalent to 2 eggs, the volume of 2 eggs. And when it comes to drink, so for drink, I don't remember. Okay. Maybe. I honestly don't remember. So it could be. Okay, that is the usual shear. Shasa revius yayin v'nichnas l'mikdash. This is a new topic in the Mishnah. Let's say you drink a revius of wine and you go into the Beis HaMikdash. You can't go into the Beis HaMikdash intoxicated, right? You can't drink and drive. You can't drink and go into the Beis HaMikdash, right? Penalty, by the way, being much more, penalty is pretty severe for drinking and driving. Penalty for going into the Beis HaMikdash while under the influence is going to be Misa Bidei Shamayim. That's a serious issur. So, Visha Kedei Achilas Pras Chayev. And, now the Mishnah here talks about a delay period. Not clear in the Mishnah what that means. Delay meaning after you go into the Beis HaMikdash, delay in terms of the drinking. Stay tuned, the Gemara is going to clarify that point. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Im Pasuk Ba, O Im Nasam Ba, Mayim Koshu Pater. Rabbi Eliezer says that if you drink the wine, but let's say you take a little break in the drinking, you don't drink it in one fell swoop, or let's say you dilute it just a little bit, so Rabbi Eliezer says you're Pater, you're not going to have a liability for going into the Beis HaMikdash, the assumption being that it doesn't intoxicate. That will we will discuss at the end of the today's daf. Okay, so many topics coming up in our Mishnah, but obviously we're going to go Keseder HaMishnah like we always do. And that is, we're going to cover now the first topic of the Mishnah. So, to eat a food, to bring about a carbon chatas, you have to eat the Isser food within a time frame. That time frame, according to the Chacham, Kedei Achilas Pras. I'll say that's clear. Although, later this morning, I will not say that's clear. But right now, I'm going to say that's clear. It's a certain amount within a certain amount of time. The position of Rav Meir, super unclear. The Rav Meir says the amount of time that it takes to eat roasted grains. What did he mean by that? And fundamentally, was he saying this to be more lenient, to be more strict? What is going on within the Shita of Rav Meir? So Ibai Lahu, and that's where we're going to open up the discussion. Rav Meir l'chomer kamar, l'kula kamar. Is Rav Meir stating a stringency or a leniency? The Gemara is going to go over both possibilities. L'chomer kamar, v'hachi ketani. Ki'ilo ochel klayos da'afilu kula yama. V'afagav de'mitzchil ve'atsof, yosem echdei achilas pras. So maybe, look, when you eat toasted grains, now, I'm not one to talk about eating toasted grains, right? Although, quite frankly, some of the cereals that we eat are, in fact, toasted grains. And just recently, right, in Brachos, in the sixth parak, which, God willing, we're going to get to in the near future, so there's a discussion about eating toasted grains. Right, question of what bracha to make on it. Anyway, the manner in which toasted grains were eaten back in the day is that it was eaten at a very slow rate, and basically it was crunched on and munched on for the entire day. And came to Mashke Achilaso Mechayev. And maybe what Reb Meir is saying is a tremendous chumra, which is that, look, as long as you are consistently eating it, even if it goes beyond the span of Kedei Achilas Pras, you're still going to be Chayev. That's one possibility to understand Reb Meir. And along comes the Chachamim. The Chachamim said, Rav Meir, no. We are categorically disagreeing with you that in order to bring about liability, the amount of a kezayis has to be eaten within the parameters of Kedei Achilas Pras. Okay. O Dilma, alternatively, that's not what Rav Meir meant. Lekula kamar. Maybe Rav Meir was actually stating a kula. Dehachi ketani. Ki'ilu ochel klayis v'hu delo ifsik beni beni. Aval de ifsik beni beni, alfagav de mitzchil ha'asof, bechtei achel es pras, pater. again, you have to just make these assumptions when going into the Gemara that this is how they used to eat toasted grains. They eat toasted grains continuously. There was no breaks in the eating of the toasted grains. Maybe what Rameir is saying is as follows. Let's say I did eat a kezayis within a kedei achilas pras, but I didn't eat it continuously. In other words, within the kedei achilas pras, let's just say for argument's sake it's 9 minutes. So within the 9 minute span, I eat a little bit, I break. I eat a little bit, I break. According to the Chachamim, the only two factors that we need to take into consideration, did I eat a full kezayis? Was it within a kedei achilas pras? If yes is the answer to both those questions, you're going to be chayiv. And maybe what Rameir is arguing is that no. That you are only going to be chayiv if I ate a kezayis, kedei achilas pras, but I also have to eat it continuously. Maybe Rameir is giving us a third requirement in order to bring about a chayiv. And then that would represent a kula, that would be a leniency. Because then what Rameir is saying is that in order to be chayiv, you have to eat a kezayis, in a kedei achilas pras, and continuously. If I'm missing any one of those features, I wouldn't be chayiv. Maybe that's what Rameir is saying. And the Chachamim say no. There aren't three factors. There are only two factors. Tashma. So now, after questioning what is Rameir's intent, was it a chumra, was it a kula? The Gemara is now going to conclude. Tashma v'chachamim romim ad shiyishe b'chdei achilas pras mitchil v'atzof. The critical word of the Mishnah in order to understand Rav Meir is the way the Chachamim respond to Rav Meir. The opening word of the Chachamim is ad, until. Now, what is the tone of that? The Gemara goes on to explain. Iyamar bishlamar Rav Meir l'chumra. If Rav Meir is presenting a chumra, haynu diktani ad. So then you understand the Chachamim's rebuttal. Until. Meaning, we don't agree with you, Rav Meir, because what you represent is a radically stringent position. Which is that even if it goes beyond kedei achilas pras, as long as it's continuous eating, so then you're going to be chayev. And the Chachamim say, no, we're of the opinion that you're only going to be chayev until the eating is done within kedei achilas pras. So good. So that's the tone of Rav Meir based on the reaction of the Chachamim, and that makes sense. Achisha ad deshai delay kedei achilas pras. Ela iamart Rav Meir lekula v'chachamim omrim. But if what Rav Meir is saying is a kula, so then the response of the Chachamim is im shaha, not ad. So the Gemara says, Elalash mamina, Rav Meir l'chumra shmamina. So we see in the Mishnah, based on the Chachamim's reaction to Rav Meir, that Rav Meir really represented a chumra. And he said that even if it goes beyond a kedei achilas pras, as long as you're eating it continuously, you're going to be chayiv. Okay. Amar Rabbanai Amar Shmuel. The Gemara starts off with the following. Quoting in the name of Shmuel, "Bichalavim uvenevela ad sheisha mitchil ve'atzof b'kedei achilas pras." When eating any prohibited food, either chalav or nevela, so the liability only comes about when you eat the kezayis within kedei achilas pras. Ochlin tameim. They're going to take out the next two words, shkatzim v'ramasim. Ochlin tameim umashkim afilu kol hayom kulo b'kedei achilas pras. If I eat tamei food or drink liquid, which is tamei, so it's going to be kedei achilas pras. Now, on that last point, my ka'amar. What did he mean by that? Amar papa hachi kamar. Afilu kol yom kulo, v'hu she'achal kezayis b'chdei achilas pras. Rav Papa goes on to explain that what's meant in the second statement is that in order to become tamei, by eating tamei foods or by drinking tamei liquids, so you could be eating or drinking it the whole day, but as long as the kezayis of it is eaten within kedei achilas pras. Now, meisvei. Now, mind you, by the way, okay, I'm going to try to be as clear as possible. Meaning, in terms about the isurim of eating prohibited foods, liability comes about when you eat a kezayis kedei achilas pras. I cannot say it any clearer, cannot say it any more flatly. That's regarding isurim. Our discussion now is revolving around tuma. And the rabbinic injunction that if you eat tummy food, you're going to become tummy. Now, how much tummy food do you have to eat in order to become tummy, rabbinically? So as we said back in the Mishnah, you have to eat the volume of two eggs, which obviously is much greater than the kezayis. Now the question on the table is there a time frame? Meaning, does that two egg volumes worth of food, of tummy food, does that have to be eaten with the kedei achilas pras? And this is now our discussion. And Rav Papa is qualifying. Rav Papa says, not necessarily. Rav Papa says that to eat the tamei food and to become tamei, you can eat it the whole day, but you have to be eating a kezias of it within kedei achilas pras. That is Rav Papa's understanding of the Braisa. The Gemara is really going to not like that understanding of the Braisa. The Gemara is going to challenge and ultimately refute this understanding. Meisve. Gemara starts off with one Braisa. Kola ochlim mitzarfim l'psua gvia bekechatsi pras. Tame food is going to be metame a person when he consumes a half of a pras. Again, the volume of 2x. So my love dachila l'chatsi pras bikdei achilas pras. Presumably, it has to be eaten with a kedei achilas pras. The Gemara says, no, not necessarily. The Braisa didn't say that. I can easily push off the Braisa. Lo, the achol kezayis kezayis b'kedei achilas pras. As long as a kezayis of it is eaten within a kedei achilas pras. So the Gemara says, okay, let's move on to the next Braisa. This next Braisa is going to be super clear. That in order for a person to become tame by eating tame foods, he has to eat the full amount within a kedei achilas pras. The Braisa is going to say it very clearly. Ultimately, Rav Papa's position is going to be refuted. Kol ha'ochlim mitzarfim l'psula tzegvia b'kechatsi pras, b'chdei achilas pras. Like I said, the Braisa says it really clearly. For a person to become tame by eating tame foods, he has to eat the volume of a chatsi pras within k'dei achilas pras. Ketzad, achal, v'chazer, v'achal. Im yesh mitzchila achila rishona v'ad sof achila achrona. K'dei achilas pras mitzarfin. Yoser mikan, ein mitzarfin. Now you could really put a bookmark right over here in the Gemara. This is now, the Braisa is saying it unequivocally. The Braisa says that for a person to become tame, he has to eat the amount of tame food, i.e. a chatzi pras, within the amount of time of k'dei achilas pras. Could not say it any clearer. At this point in time, we could end the discussion. In fact, we are going to end the discussion. Rav Papa's position is non-defensible. Okay, but what we're going to do now is that we're going to read the rest of the Braisa, because the Gemara does this often. As long as we have the Braisa here available, so the Gemara now is going to go through the rest of the Braisa, even though it's not related to our topic and our discussion. Next point of the Braisa. Lo itir lechol pachos me kishir leiriv litvol yar v'tava v'alav yishlima mitzarif v'yishlima mitzarif. Let's say you ate tummy food, but you took a break to go into the mikvah, right? Strange scenario. You ate, right, in order to become tummy, you have to eat an amount of a chatzi pras. Let's say you ate half that amount, you toveled in the mikvah, you came up, and you ate the other half of that amount. So what the Brice is telling us is that tefillah did nothing for you. All right, it's similar to what we just discussed earlier this morning with Rabbi Gamliel and having a idea halfway through, where he says the idea is not significant. It's not the same, but if you're following, though, it's a very similar idea. You go into the mikvah halfway through because you're not yet tameh. So that going into the mikvah did nothing for you, and so therefore the eating that you do afterwards is going to combine with the eating that you do before. In terms of timing, yeah, right, you have to eat the two eatings have to be done. It's a lot of activity in 9 minutes, but still. The point is that the tefillah is not going to break up the eatings. And that was the second point of the Braisa. The third point of the Braisa. Hitira la le'ubra le'echol pachos mikashir mimnei sakana. A woman who's pregnant and sakana in danger. So she can eat less than a shear. The Gemara is going to ask the obvious question on this Braisa. If sakana over here means sakana nefashos, where her life is in jeopardy, let her eat as much as she wants in order to sustain her. The Gemara is going to ask that question. And finally, the last point of the Braisa, called Amashkim and Starfim Lipsol Segvia Berevias, Bichtei Achilas Pras. All liquids are going to make a person puzzle if the liquids are tame, with a revias eaten within Kedei Achilas Pras. Okay, now I'm embarrassed because earlier this morning, it's great, it's really great. Earlier this morning, I wasn't sure in terms of how much liquid to eat, to consume in order to become tameh. It's in today's daf. Okay, which you probably could tell I looked ahead and I saw already. Okay, anyway, good. Moments of embarrassment, enjoy them. So so the amount of liquid to be consumed is a revius. Good. Ketzad, shasa v'chasa v'shasa, im yesh mitchil shesia. Rishon of Atzov Shisiya Achrona Kedei Achilas Pras Mitzarfin Yos Mekan Ein Mitzarfin. Okay, so the amount of liquid, tummy liquid to drink is a revius, but it must be drunk within Kedei Achilas Pras. And finally, I know it's a long brisa, but we're here. Huchulola Magatame Mace
Lahanik bena ubena tahor. A woman who comes into contact with a person who came into contact with human remains. So that woman is, now if you're following, the mace itself is a aviyah vosotoma. The person touching the mace is an avatoma. The woman touching that person is now a rishon latoma. Now that transfer occurs. Because remember, a person can become tame with coming into contact with an avatoma. The person touching the mace is an avatoma. So that means the woman touching that person is now a rishon latoma. Now what about when she's nursing and the milk that goes through her to her child? Is her child now going to be tame? The Braisa concludes with no. Her child is going to be tar, not tame, which we're going to be discussing also later on. Okay, we have now many points that the Braisa brought down. The entire reason why we brought down the Braisa is for the first point. And so let's just quickly wrap it up quickly, because we're going to discuss every one of the points on the Braisa. Kitani miyasim yesh mitchila, achila vishon ve'atzofa, achila bechtei, achila spras mitzarif, tiyufta derabanai tiyufta. So first and foremost, the Gemara says we are dispensing with the position Rabbanai, because the Braisa says very clearly that in order to become tame by eating tame foods, you have to eat a chatzi pras within the time frame of kedei achilas pras. Not like what Rabbanai said. He said that you only have to eat a kezais of it within kedei achilas pras. Obviously, kezais by itself is not enough. You keep eating over the course of the day, but as long as a kezais of it is eaten with a kedei achilas pras, it will be mitzarif. The position is rejected. The accepted position is that you have to eat the full amount within kedei achilas pras in order to become tame. Amamar. We're here now. We quoted a lot of halachas in the Braisa, and the Gemara wants the opportunity to explain each of the points in the Braisa. Lo itira lo lecho pachus mechashir le re litvo mai kamar. Now, I know I already gave a really clear explanation of that part of the Braisa. The Gemara is going to say it out clearer, but I knew the Gemara coming up ahead, so I presented it already. So here's the Gemara now just spelling it out. Am Rav Yehuda hachi kamar. This is what the Braisa meant. Acho pachus mechashir. If you ate less than a shear, lo itira lo leirei v'litvol. Don't go to the mikvah yet, because you're not tame yet, and don't go to the mikvah. She'im yared v'tava v'ala v'shlima mitzarif. Because going to the mikvah is not going to do anything for you. Meaning right now, you ate the half shear. Going to the mikvah is not going to change that reality that you ate the half shear. And then when you come up from the mikvah and you eat the second half of the shear, you're going to become tame. V'asala memra, ahandele tefila kamaisa. You're going to say to yourself, well, I told them the mikvah. Doesn't that clean the slate? It does not. Tvila only works after your tummy. Tvila doesn't help you before you become tummy. Pre-tumma tvila. Doesn't work. Okay, Kitani. Another point of the Braisa. A woman who's pregnant and she is in danger, she's allowed to eat but less than a shear. The Gemara asks the obvious question. Less than a shear? So then let her eat as much as she wants in order to for her to be out of sakana. Amar papa hachi ketani. Huchur la l'ubra pachus mechashir afilu tuva. Mimnei sakana. If possible, so what you should do is you should eat the food, but eat it in increments of less than a shir kedei achilas pras, if that's possible. Meaning, you should try to minimize the amount of iser. Now, presumably what the Braisa here is describing is Yom Kippur. The Gemara didn't utter the word Yom Kippur, but presumably the Braisa is describing Yom Kippur.
But it's not an Isser if it's a Kana, no?
Correct. It's not an Isser, but still, the Isser should be, the amount of food still should be minimized, if possible. And I'll say it as clearly as possible. If possible. If not possible, obviously, the Sakana is going to override the Isserim of Yom Kippur. But if possible, minimize the Isser. Ketani, hitir lamagatame meis lahanikas bana ubana tahar. Okay, now the Gemara is going to spend some time discussing this. Let's reset this case of the Braisa. A woman came into contact with a person who came into contact with a mace. Again, mace is an avi avosatoma. The man touching the mace is an avatoma, or the woman, doesn't matter. We'll use the example of a woman. It doesn't really matter in terms of tuma. A woman touches the mace, so the woman now is an avatoma. She touches her friend. Her friend now is a rishon latoma. Just what I'm saying is super clear. So let's just, right, because stay with me. This woman now can nurse her son, and this woman is a rishon latoma, can nurse her son, and her son now is not going to be considered having consumed tummy food. Even though the food is coming from a Rishon LeTumah.
He's touching the mother.
He's what? He's touching?
He's touching the mother.
The baby's touching the mother. Let's recap. The mother is a Rishon LeTumah. A person does not become Tameh by touching a Rishon LeTumah. A person can only become Tameh by touching an Avatumah. Period. Period. Midrabanan also nothing. Midrabanan also nothing. Midrabanan, you become Tameh by eating Tameh foods. Midrabanan. So now, this baby is going to become Tameh, but only by eating Tameh foods. Mm-hmm. What the Braisa now is teaching us is a Chiddush. It's a novelty. The idea that the mother is a Rishon LeTumah, the milk coming out of her presumably also is Tameh, right? It sounds reasonable, what I'm saying. And meanwhile, when the baby nurses from the mother, the baby is not going to become Tameh, even though the baby ingested Tameh food. Good. That's what we are describing. So, Hitir Lamagames Lahanik is Bana. U Bana Tahor. Amai Tahor. So the Gemara says, well, wait 1 second. On the fact that the baby's touching the mother, that creates no tumma, as we just got done explaining. Good. Amaitar. Kevin diyana chalav it mele mechalav. But isn't the baby ingesting tummy food? And so therefore, if the baby's ingesting tummy food, the baby should become tummy for the simple reason of the gzera derabban that we've been discussing all morning. That by drinking a certain amount of tummy food within a certain amount of time, so one is going to become Tameh midrabanan. Just a quip. Not even a quip, by the way. Parenthetical note. Right? Earlier we described how the Kedeach Les Pras may be somewhat of a subjective shear depending on the food. Or in other words, we're talking about an infant nursing from the mother. Now, how much is the baby actually getting out of the mother? How much milk is the baby getting out of the mother? Within a certain amount of time, it sounds like from our discussion over here, that if the milk, in fact, is tummy, which it is, so then the baby is going to be tummy, despite the fact that its rate may be a little bit different. Close parentheses. Let's go back to the Gemara. Now, question on the table is as follows. So good. So I understand that the contact is not going to create tumor for the baby. Fine. But the ingestion of the tummy food, shouldn't that make the baby tummy? Now, v'chitem alo is kasher. So the Gemara says, okay, maybe technicality. The technicality is, in order for food to become tummy, it must first come into contact with a liquid. Now, I know this is a little bit of a twist, because what are we talking about? We're talking about milk. We're talking about a liquid. So liquid needs to come into contact with a liquid in order for it to be mukshar lekabel tuma? Yes, that's exactly what we're saying. The liquid needs to come into contact with a liquid in order for it to be mukshar lekabel tuma. In other words, coming directly from the mother, coming right directly on tap, if you will, so that in and of itself is not mukshar. But the Gemara says,
seven liquids.
It's one of the seven liquids.
It is one of the seven liquids.
Chalav is one of the seven liquids.
Human milk.
We're going to say yes. In fact, not only are we going to say yes, the Gemara is about to say it. So the Gemara says, lo is kasher. So in his kasher, betipa melochleches api adad. So the Gemara says, well, in order for the mother to nurse, the mother's going to prime a little bit. There will be a little bit of milk on the mother right before nursing. And the Gemara says, that little bit of milk, that's going to serve as the hechsher. So Amrav Nachman, Amrav Baravua, Shianak B'Tkifa Achas. So the Gemara now is going to suggest, well, again, the question now is a strong question. The baby should become Tameh by ingesting the Tameh milk of the mother. The Gemara's question was, it wasn't Mokshar. The Gemara's answer is no, it is Mokshar because there is going to be a little bit of priming and there will be some milk on the mother, which will serve as the Hechsher. The Gemara now is basically going to try to say, well, maybe the baby nursed in such a strong gulp that really there was no priming necessary. That's what the Gemara is saying right now. Amar Abba Bar Avuha Shianak B'Tkifa Achas. Okay, so the baby did it really strong, and there was no priming, and therefore there was no Hechsher. So Lo Iniach Tipa Melechleches Al Pi Adan. Amar Rav Shei Tshuvas B'Dav. Rav says, look, this discussion, it's strange. I mean, I could say that outside of the Gemara, but even within the Gemara. Chada D'Kechazina L'Pumet D'Yinuka D'Malei Chala. First of all, there was priming that was done. Right, you look at the baby's mouth, the baby has milk on the mouth, meaning certainly there is milk outside of the ingestion, the ingested milk. So there was hechsher. Ve'od makum chalav mayanhu. And the Gemara says, and let's attack this issue even more fundamentally. The milk coming out of the mother. So that is what's called mayan, meaning bodily secretions. And this is a discussion that we've had before, and we're going to have again in Masecht Nida. And that is when we're talking about bodily secretions of somebody who's tamei. So we're going to put them in three different categories, and milk obviously being one of them. So those secretions are tummy, regardless of hechsher, no hechsher, meaning these are just simply secretions of a tamei person. When it comes to the milk coming out of a mother, of a human, so that milk is going to be tamei. If the mother's tamei, the milk's going to be tamei regardless of heksher, no heksher. Now, behema in a tamei al ratzon. Now, the milk coming out of an animal, now remember, an animal can't become tamei. A live animal can't become tamei. So the milk coming out of a live animal only is tamei for one reason, because it's an ochel. So there it needs heksher. But when it comes to the milk coming out of a mother, of a human mother, there's no heksher that's needed. Its tumah is not predicated on it being a food. It's a secretion of the mother. And if the mother's tamei, so is the milk that comes out of her. So my love shalom ratzon de lo nichale v'ketani metamei. Even if it's lo nichale, it's going to be tamei. Ela amarava hainu tamei de benal tor de safik yanak kashir safik lo yanak v'im tim salama yanak safik yanku b'achilas pras safik yanku b'yoster mechdei achilas pras. Rava says, do you know why the child is tahor? Because we really don't know. There are two things we don't know. One, we don't know how much the child ingested. Two, we don't know the time frame in which the child ingested. In halacha, we refer to this as a sfeik sfeika. There are multiple doubts over here, so the child is not going to become tame based on the multiple questions that we can ask. So, but what Rava really is saying now is that fundamentally, the milk that comes out of the mother who's tame is in fact tame. The only reason why the child is not going to be tame for consumption is because of the sfeikos. Ularava makam chalav mayanu velo tzarech hechsher v'atzinan. Now the Gemara says, now, hold on. We said that the milk coming out of a mother is a ma'ayan. The Gemara says, I would like to test that thesis and really poke holes at it. Ha'isha shenatav chelav midadeha v'nafa la'avir tanur, tanur tame. A woman who expresses milk, and that milk, and the woman herself is tame, and that milk goes into the airspace of a tanur. Tanur over here being a kli cheres, so the tanur now is tame. V'kashlam, a ma'is kasher. And we asked the question, well, that drop of milk that went into the oven, how did it first become mukshar? V'amar Rav Yochanan b'tipa meluchleches al pi adad. And the Gemara, and Rav Yochanan's answer is, well, you know, there was a little bit of priming that was done, and that primed milk is going to be the hechsher for the next drop of milk that comes out. The Gemara says, v'chi tema, Rav lo sevlak Rav Yochanan. So the Gemara says, okay, great, that's Rav Yochanan. Maybe Rav doesn't subscribe to Rav Yochanan. The Gemara says, that's not tenable. V'atanya. The Gemara quotes a braisa. We saw this braisa already a number of times, and we will see it again in Masechta Nida, coming up. Nimseis ata omer tisha mashkin, bezov. When a person is a zav, an avatoma, so there are 9 secretions. What we're going to do is we're going to put them into 3 different categories. So it's going to be very easy to remember, not very, but easy to remember, and that's going to be basically 3, 3, and 3. Now, our first grouping of 3 is Zeh, Lecha, Srucha, and Reya. So these first secretions are basically bodily waste secretions. Perspiration, pus, feces. So coming out of a tummy person, so because these are waste products, so therefore, Tahor Lagamre. They have no tumor whatsoever, even though they're coming out of a human who he or she is tummy. Okay, that is category number 1. Category number 2. Demas Eno V'dam Magapaso. A tear, blood coming out of a cut, or chalav isha, or the milk of the mother. Mitamin tomas mashkin berevius. So they're going to be tamei, but only as a food, not as a ma'ayan, not as part of the secretion of the body. Meaning when you have these liquids coming out of a human, so their tuma is going to fall categorically into tumas ochlin, not tuma of a zav. And there are many differences between Tumas Ochlin versus Tumas of Azav. Most notably, Tumas Zav is an Avatuma. Tumas Ochlin is only going to be susceptible to Tumah, but not the actual Avatuma. And finally, the third category, Roko, Zovo, Meme Raglov. However, the spit and the actual discharge that comes out of their genitalia and their urine. So Metamin Tumas Chamura B'chol Shehu. So that is Tumah Chamura. Meaning that is a secretion that is considered part and parcel of the person, and the person is an avatoma, and these secretions are going to be an avatoma. Meme Raglav, by the way, I admit. I admit. In other words, if I were making the categorizations, so I would have taken urine, I would have put it in the first category, not in this most severe category. So I'm at a loss to try to explain it. I would say, but merely as a suggestion, Maybe because it's coming from the place in which the tumma itself is generated from, perhaps that's the correct pshat. I'm not sure, but regardless, our focus for today is going to be on the milk coming out of the mother. Where was it categorically? Category number two. Not one, not three, but category number two. Which means that it's not ma'ayan. Its tumma is not because it's sourced from the mother, but its tumma is because of tumas ochlin. So now, b'chol shavi amar makam chalav ma'ayan, chalav nami, nitma tumma chamura, b'chol shehu, kizova viroko, elosh ma'mina, makam chalav isha lav ma'ayanhu. So clearly, after learning this braisa, we now see that Rav Yochanan is correct. Right? Rav Yochanan's position super supported from the braisa. Because the braisa does not put chalav isha in category number one as being like her spit or being like a discharge. But rather, it's going to be like, it is in category number two. It's not a ma'ayan. So the Gemara says, so good. So Rav Yochanan now supported. Now we go back to Rava. Because Rava told us that the child nursing from the mother's tummy, and therefore the milk coming out is going to be tummy. And why isn't the child a tummy? So Rava made the argument earlier, well, it really is ma'ayan, but because of the sfeikos, we don't know how much the child ingested. We don't know the time frame in which the child ingested it. So therefore, the child is going to be tahor. We've just learned together that that's not true. Meaning not the sfeikos, but his premise that it's a ma'ayan. It's not a ma'ayan. So the Gemara says, Ihachi kasha le hamas nisa. So the Gemara says, okay, but remember, what brought Rava to this place? What brought Rava to the place was the earlier braisa making a distinction where if I'm drinking the milk of an animal, so for the milk to become tamei, it has to be l'ratzon, but not shalol l'ratzon. But when it comes to the milk of a human mother's milk, so there, bein l'ratzon, bein shalol l'ratzon. Oh, so Rava, it got Rava thinking, well, if it doesn't matter whether it was mukshar or not mukshar, it's tamei because it's a ma'ayan. We've rejected that out of hand right now. We're saying that the mother's milk is not a ma'ayan. So then how did you understand the braisa? The Gemara revisits the braisa. Amar Rava, mitame bein l'ratzon bein shalol l'ratzon. Misvar shalol l'ratzon de amar delo nichale. So it must be like this. Shalol l'ratzon does not mean that the child articulates lo nichale. Now, it's kind of funny, by the way, because if we're talking about an infant, the child is not articulating anything. But remember, back in the day, and you don't have to go that far back historically, and in impoverished countries, this is certainly the case. So children are nursing from their mother, right, later in their life, right? So I'm sorry for mentioning this, but it's just one of those memories that just sticks with me, right? In a biography, Manny Ramirez notes that he lived in such poverty, he's a baseball player. So he grew up in such poverty that he was nursing until 5 years of age. He says he remembers clearly nursing from his mother. So the Gemara now is saying that when the braisa says shalol l'ratzon, it means shalol l'ratzon doesn't mean that the child says I don't want it, but what it means is my shalol l'ratzon da amar d'daita d'tina. I'm sorry, shalol l'ratzon. Now we're missing a critical word of the Gemara over here, stama. Meaning the child doesn't say anything. The amar d'daita d'tina krevel agabe chalav. Ava amar lo nichalei tahor. So well, here's what we're saying. The mother's milk is not a mayan. It's tummy because it's a food. Now we know when it comes to food, so it needs hechsher. So when the braisa says l'ratzon, shalol l'ratzon, it just simply means that the full setting of a child towards its mother milk is that it wants it. L'ratzon means the child is asking for it. Shalol l'ratzon means the child isn't saying either. Neither I want it nor I don't want it. And the shalol l'ratzon just simply means that the default position is that the child wants it. But if the child says, I don't want it, so then it's eino mokshar, and the child is going to be tar. Achol ochlin tamei, we continue. Lama li shehiya. We are in the last part of the braisa. We're asking about shehiya. Now, as far as shehiya is concerned, so diktani v'shal, amar of Yehuda hachi ketani. This is what it is saying. Achol ochlin tamei v'shasa mashkin tamei v'shasa revias yain v'shaha be'achil asan uvishti asan kedei achilas pras v'nechnas lemikdash chayev. Even if you, we're not talking, the shehiya is not going on when you're in the Beis HaMikdash. When you're in the Beis HaMikdash, liability comes out immediately. You step foot into the Beis HaMikdash, you're liable. We're talking about getting to the point of being intoxicated. As long as the wine is consumed within Kedei Achilas Pras, so now you are under the influence, halachically, and you can't go into the Beis HaMikdash. Even though there was pauses, but as long as it was consumed within a Kedei Achilas Pras, you're going to be chayv. Rebbe Elazar Omer, Tana Rabbanan. And I'm going to make it towards the upcoming Mishnah. So I'm be spending a couple more minutes just getting to the Mishnah and get us all caught up to speed. So if you have to go, totally understand, but I'm here till the Mishnah. Tana Rabbanan. Yain v'sheich al-teish yachol afilu koshu afilu migito. There are going to be three opinions on the matter of intoxication and what brings about a liability for being intoxicated and going to the Beis HaMikdash. I might have thought, afilu migito. Let's say I drink what you and I would call grape juice. Right? It's not fermented. So tamalamer v'sheichar ain aser l'kedei l'shaker. So no, it's got to be alcoholic in order for there to be a liability. V'kama kedei l'shaker revias yayin ben memyom. So the amount of wine, a revias. Amount of time fermented, 40 days. Now, as far as why the Torah says the word yayin, when yayin can even include grape juice, it just simply means that if I drank grape juice, so then that's an azara. That's a prohibition. But in terms about bringing full liability, by the way, means misa bidei shamayin. So for that, it has to be something which intoxicates. Rav Yehuda amar yayin en le'el yayin, shar mishachar minayin. Second opinion, that of Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda says it's not just wine; it's anything which intoxicates. Tamalamer v'shechar imke matamalam yayin ala yayin b'misa v'al shar mashkin b'azara. According to Rav Yehuda, the misa b'dei shamayim comes about only for wine. For other intoxicants, it's an azara; it's a lav. It's just a lav, which in of itself is already serious, but it's not misa b'dei shamayim. And Rabbi Elazar omer yayin al teisht v'shechar al tishtu. He's going to be focusing on the manner in which it's drunk, which is derech shichruso. You have to drink it in an intoxicating manner. What does that mean? Hayim hifzik bo o nasal sochamayim koshu pater. That means to say that if while drinking you take a break, you pause in the middle of drinking, so that is enough of a sobering effect where you're not going to bring about liability. Or if, let's say, you dilute a little bit, that also is going to that's also going to prevent liability. So, by my plea, the Gemara now goes through all three positions. Tanakama Savar Gemir and Shecha Shecha Minazir. So, according to the Tanakama, Shecha Shecha is learned from Nazir. Now, we know that by a Nazir, so all products of the grape are prohibited, both wine and even grape juice. So, that's the Tanakama's position. Rav Yehuda lo yalav Shecha Shecha Minazir. Now, Rav Yehuda does not have such a Gzer Shava. Rabbi Elazar Savar, my Shecha Midaduhu Mishakir. Rav Elazar understands that the word Shecher in the Torah describing this prohibition of not going into the Beis HaMikdash is not limited to wine, but any intoxicant. Kamana Azlahad Detayin, the Gemara says, let's consider now the following braisa. Achol Devela Ki'ila V'shasa Devash O Chala V'nichnas HaMikdash. Now, I always struggle with this braisa because we see this braisa numerous times throughout Shas, and somehow the fruits back then were intoxicating. Right, sugar. They're sugar foods and milk also, right? Fermented milk. We generally call that spoiled milk. But okay, somehow these food products got to a point of being intoxicating. So and you go into the Beis HaMikdash v'shimesh and you served in the Beis HaMikdash. So lokem, you're subject to malchus. Kaman k'Rav Yehuda. So that goes like the position of Rav Yehuda of the three positions that we just went through. I'm Rav Yehuda bar Achosai, halacha k'Rebbe Elazar. So the halacha, in fact, is going to be like Rebbe Elazar. Rebbe Elazar says that you're going to be chayiv if you drink it in an intoxicating manner. Now, v'kari Rebbe Elazar tuvina dechachima. Now, as far as Rebbe Elazar is concerned, he's being described as the literally the best of the chachamim. Okay. Rav Acha dehutzal hava gidra ala devasayu. Rav Acha Dehutzal have a nidra Allah devisayu. Rav Acha Dehutzal had some domestic issues, and I know what. It's a lot of information for us. So and he made a neder against his wife, and so he wanted the neder to be removed. Okay, it was a moment. It was a bad moment, and so he wanted the neder lifted. So also coming to Rav Ashi, Amar Lei Zil Ha'ina V'Salamacher. So Rav Ashi says, look, I'd love to help you right now. Shalom bayis, obviously very important. But right now, I can't hear your case. Right now, I'm under the influence. Come, okay. Come back tomorrow. I'll be sober tomorrow. Derav lamukhi amare ala miyumatev lachavre. In fact, as a general rule, Rav wouldn't paskin halacha on Yantiv. Rav on Yantiv enjoyed Yantiv, like we are required to do. Simchas Yantov, and it demands of us that we eat meat, we drink wine. The for those of you who don't like eating meat,
do they drink wine all the time?
We've discussed this, yeah, by the way. Right. Back in the day, the beverage was wine.
Yeah.
In other words, they didn't drink water.
Exactly. So what is Yom Tov? Every day is like that.
True, but on Yom Tov, though, I guess they would drink more. We're going to discuss. So on Yom Tov, they drank. So he drank wine. He was intoxicated. He was not in position to pass on Yom Tov. In fact, Rav, as a rule, would not set up his amora. His amora, by the way, was the human microphone. So he would not set up his amora, meaning he wouldn't broadcast halacha to others until the next day, where he was sober. Yishum Shechros. The Gemara spells it out. Because he was intoxicated. Amar Leiv, Amar Rav Halacha Kareb Lazar, Umaru de Karami Be Maya. So now, remember, the story started with Rav Acha going to Rav Ashi for a release from his neder, and Rav Ashi says, I'm drunk. And I can't paskin today. And now, Rav Acha says back to Rav Ashi, but wait one second. I saw you drinking. You drank with diluting of the wine, and you poured a little water into your wine. You're fine, right? Could you solve my domestic issues right now, and let's not wait till tomorrow? So Armalei Halokasha Habirivius Habiyosim Echte Rivius. The Gemara says, look, we do pasuk like Rav Elazar, but also, I mean, this is really a common sense point, but we're seeing it in the Gemara, right? If you dilute a Rivius of wine, so that is going to be sobering. However, if you dilute, but you drink a gallon of wine, and you dilute it, you're going to be intoxicated. So you have to take into consideration, yes, dilution helps, but you can't ignore how much wine you consumed. So you have wine, you have some water, you have wine, you have water. It doesn't matter how much water you have, you're going to get drunk. So Tanu Rabbanan. Ula havdo ben akorsh ben achol, elu damin ve'erchim ve'charamin ve'agdeshos, ben atame ben atahor, elu tameos v'taros, ula horos, Zu hora'a, es kol chukim ha'elu, I'm sorry, es kol ha'chukim, elu midrashas. Asher diber Hashem, zu halacha biyad Moshe. I'm sorry, zu halacha biyad Moshe, zu tamud. So, what we're learning together is, these are the things that a person cannot do while under the influence. He can't be involved in anything we just described. Not appraisals, not tumah tahara, not hora, not rulings of isra v'heter. Now, it says midrashos. I don't have clarity on that issue. Meaning, if you're drunk, you can't darshan. But maybe darshaning over here means halachic darshaning, right. I would suggest to you. Halacha, Talmud, you can't be involved in that. Yachol Alfa Mishnah, how about Mishnah? Now, Mishnah is the backbone of Torah Sheba'al Peh. But at the same time, Mishnah is not Psak. Right? You learn a Mishnah, you don't know the Psak. What you know is the basics. You know the foundation, but you don't know Psak. So Talmud Lamar Ula Horos. So interesting. So while under the influence, so you could teach a Mishnah, but that's it. After that, then we get into Psak Halacha, and you can't do that under the influence. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, Omer Yachol Af Talmud. He includes Talmud as well. Talmud Lomar, I'm sorry. Yachol Af Talmud, Talmud Lomar, Ula Hora. So the Gemara says, I'm sorry, you might have thought that Talmud should be included. Lahoras comes to tell me that Talmud is included in the prohibition. Kamar Azla Hadetanya, Yatsa Sharetz, Yatsa. Shem it's tamei tzvardeya tahor. Shisha esu yayin morin b'amohora. So let's say somebody comes over to you and asks you, is this sheretz tamei? Now, by the way, it's funny because for you and I, like we would stumble on such a halachic question like that because there are only eight sheretzim which are tamei. I ask you, what are the eight sheretzim? The Torah does identify them. We have a good idea of what they are. We don't really know what they are. So if someone comes up to you with a lizard dead in his hand, is this going to be tamei? So you and I, quite frankly, are not going to, we have a good chance of getting the wrong answer. But back in the day, when they knew their shmona shratzim, and someone goes over to a chacham while intoxicated and says, "Hey, is this tamei?" That's ABCs, right? That's Torah shebichsav. He can answer, even though he's under the influence. Or if somebody comes over to you with a frog, a dead frog, is this tamei? Again, it's ABCs, it's Tahor. He can say it's Tahor. It's a pasuk in the Torah. I know for most of us and even the educated amongst us, you know, we don't all know this. But the Gemara is assuming that this is like basic information. So name Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda Ivelo Rabbanan. So the Gemara says, isn't that Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda not the Chachamim? The Gemara says no. Afilo Tim Rabbanan. Shani Hachad Dezil Kari Bei Rav. This is such basic information. This is a pasuk in Chumash. Go to a child in you know, in school, in yeshiva, and ask him, shratzim, tameh? So I know it's a great opportunity to talk about our educational system. Let's pass on that for now. So you go to a child who's learning chumash. You ask him, sheretz tameh? The answer is yes, it's tameh. It's a pasuk in chumash. Right? A non-sheretz, the frog, is it tahor? The answer is yes. So amarav, halachik Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda. So the Gemara says the halach is in fact like Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda. Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda gave an allowance for teaching Mishnah and even teaching Talmud. So the Gemara says, "Vaha Rav lo mukim amora miyumatav lechavre mishum shechur." So the Gemara says, "What about Rav? Rav didn't give a shir on Yantiv, right? He's just teaching Mishnah. He's just teaching Gemara." The Gemara's answer is, "No, he's not." Shani Rav de ori more. So the Gemara says, "Rav, whenever he gives shir, so he says over halacha as well." So v'nekem de lo luri. So the Gemara says, "Well, why don't we make a request, Rav? You're going to say shir. We want to hear your shir. Why not just hold off on the psak?" So the Gemara says he can't. The Gemara says they can't. It's just, in other words, his style of shir was such where he said shir and he said over the halacha at the end of shir. That was the style of Rav. And so therefore he was incapable of not giving psak. And so therefore when he was intoxicated, he would not say over the halacha. Okay, adkan. Let's quickly recap. I know it was a long shir today. I thank everyone's indulgence. Also, thank the school for giving me off today. let's go over. There's a lot today. So today we finished up the discussion of yesterday's daf regarding Remeir and the Chachamim, the testimony of witnesses against your own position about whether you're chayv a karban, you're not chayv a karban. So the halacha falls like the Chachamim. Your position is going to trump their position. The cases where Rav Meir ends up even agreeing with the Chachamim, when there are three cases like that, we went over. Hitzdarfus, the end of yesterday's daf, big topic, important topic in terms of what is going to combine towards a Karban Chatas, what is not going to combine, and the various shitas amongst the Tanayim. The shita of Rabbi Yoshua, Tamchuyim are going to be Mechalik, the shita of Rabbi Gamliel, that a Yediyah that separates a Chatzishir is not going to be Mechalik. Okay. We did the Mishnah today. The amount of time that you have to eat the Isser food, in order to be chayve karban chatas. So, machlok is in the Mishnah between Rabbeinu and the Chachamim, the halacha falls like the Chachamim, that the food has to be eaten bichdei achilas pras. That's tenet, that's basic, it's fundamental. The Gemara's discussion today, a lot of it dealt with tumah tahara. If you eat a chatzi pras of tummy food, you're going to become tameh. That's a tumah derabanan. Today, please forgive me, I didn't explain why on another occasion, but that's a tumah derabanan. And the questions on the table were, is that also going to be circumscribed within Kedei Achilas Pras? The answer is, yes, it is. There was a position, Rabbanai, who thought differently. The Gemara rejected that position. We quoted a brisa on Yugim Lamed Aleph that went over that point and many other points, and the Gemara took the opportunity to explore all the other points of the brisa. And then we concluded today with the Isser of being intoxicated and going into the Beis HaMikdash. There are three opinions in terms of what are considered the intoxicants, which brings about a liability. Liability comes in two forms. There's Misa Bidei Shemayim, and there's a Lav. It could be that we're going to separate wine from other intoxicants. There are various shitas. And then the Gemara's conclusion today about paskening halacha while under the influence. One is not allowed to do that. The Gemara darshaned that out based on a pasuk in Vayikra. And the question is, what about Torah Shebaal Peh? What about Mishnah that you can teach? What about a pasuk that you can do while under the influence? That's just a pasuk. What about Gemara, teaching Gemara, Machlokis? What about Rav, who didn't say Shir on Yantiv? He was under the influence. Why didn't he just simply say Shir and Gemara? The Gemara says that's not Rav's style. Rav's style was that when he said Shir, he always said Halacha at the end. He always concluded Halacha, and so therefore he postponed his Shir until he was sober.